This is Valley Public Radio, and I'm David Alse. Composer and jazz orchestra leader Maria Schneider has helped shape the evolution of large ensemble jazz over the past two decades with her distinctive musical voice. With her jazz orchestra recordings, she's won multiple Grammy Awards. In 2019, she was named an NEA Jazz Master, the nation's highest honor in jazz. In 2020, her album Concert in the Garden was put in the National Recording Registry, and she was also elected into the prestigious American Academy of Arts and Sciences. In recent years, Maria Schneider's been increasingly outspoken about big data companies, writing articles and white papers, appearing on Copyright Office roundtables, and testifying before Congress. We recently had a chance to speak with her about the state of music in the digital age. First, we'll hear a little bit of the title track from her latest recording, Data Lords. Maria Schneider, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll just get right into it and talk about your epic new two-disc release, Data Lords, which deals with conflicting relationships we live in between the digital and the natural worlds. I want to get into kind of the genesis of the work and where your head was when you started working on it, and follow that thread where it goes.
Well, it's interesting. I just watched a documentary just yesterday on Netflix called The Social Dilemma, which I highly recommend to everybody. And they actually have a wonderful website. And the things that they were expressing were so much of what I've been feeling. It's just this, basically the usury of all of us from big data companies, attracting us, making us addicted to free content and things to get our data, because they know how powerful that data is. They know how much money they can make from it, because all that data gives them the power then to precision target everybody for whatever need some company out there might want. And I feel that it's at the source of so many problems in our world. For me personally, being a musician, we were the first to see what it was like to have our work exchanged for data without us being compensated properly. And this thing made me very angry. I've been very outspoken about it. And for me, with my music, whenever I've written music, it's always been the case that I just write. And then as I come up with something I like, my mind often starts going somewhere while the music is going. And before I know it, it's almost like a film score in my own mind for the music, except it's reverse engineered. The music is like drawing out memory or thoughts or associations. And then I use those associations, if I get excited by that association between the sound and the idea in my mind, I use that then to drive the music. And I guess, you know, what my music was telling me in this period is, which I realized after writing probably almost, I would say 75 or 80% of this music, I looked at it and I looked back and I said, oh my God, this is telling me that in my life, I am struggling to maintain my connection to nature, to humanity, to art, to all those things that are really about what's true in this world, what's real in this world, as opposed to this other thing that's all about really about data and usury, you know, and giving us convenience, but to their own end. And so I decided, okay, now that I realize this is about the struggle between the two, I'm going to make two CDs and represent both sides.
And so the one CD is called The Digital World. And then after that,
journey, excruciating journey through the digital world, then we get some organic release with the second CD, Our Natural World. Mm-hmm. And there's another kind of dichotomy that's going on in the work, and it's particularly expressed in a couple of songs, and that's this juxtaposition of connectivity, disconnectedness, you know, mm-hmm. at a time on the plus side, in certain ways, network technologies allow us to be more connected with different people and data and everything in more ways than ever. And yet at the same time, we're more disconnected than ever. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I an analogy I was just thinking about the other day in talking to some students via Zoom is that in a way there might be an analogy with music. In the old days when we paid for music, we each had far less music in our life. We listened to the radio and we were really excited for that moment that's going to come, and it's going to be this ephemeral moment that comes and goes of hearing something. And then if we want it, we buy it. And then you buy it, and depending how much money you decide to blow on records, you have, you know, a foot, 2 feet, 3 feet worth of LPs or whatever, and you absorb them. The ones that you most love, you wear them white, you know, the cardboard would start to crack. You know, you could always tell what records you most loved. And we took the music. We knew the music, every note, every moment of the orchestration, the sound. We were so keyed into every record. We savored it, as opposed to now. If we listen to music through YouTube or Spotify or whatever, people don't know who's playing on that track. They don't know who produced it. They don't know when it was made. They don't know what other pieces were on it. Nothing, and it just sort of comes and goes. Usually it's an MP3. It doesn't sound that great, but they don't really know the difference because they're listening through earbuds, and it's a much more transient, not deep experience. And I think that the same thing is happening in our relationships. You know, these 1,000 emails, you know, you respond to somebody with a like or a hand clap or I don't even know what, because I never do that, an exclamation point or whatever. Ha ha, I laughed out loud. Really? You know, because nobody really has the time to just really say, what you said really cracked me up because, or hey, it was great to see you, you know, and wow, I really feel love for you, or hearing the voice of the person on the phone. So I think that these kind of so many not deep relations, you know, I'd much rather have a few relationships that mean a lot, that so many that are meaningless. And, you know, if we see these kids, this rampant thing too of these YouTubers, you know, that have these massive audiences and they're killing themselves, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, is it great to have so many relationships? You know, maybe not.
Speaking of relationships, you've had a long relationship with everybody plays in your orchestra. Mm-hmm. Ellington used to say that, you know, every band leader needs a gimmick to keep people in their orchestra. And he would joke and say, he'd say, my gimmick is that, you know, I pay them money and they play music, you know. So obviously, you know, the connection you have with the artist in your orchestra is not a gimmick at all. How do you go about picking folks to be in the orchestra? Because everyone's smiling, chain seats, and there's one or two returnees and new members in this latest lineup of the orchestra. How do you go about picking folks, and what's the kind of the nature of your relationship with those players over the decades now you've worked with them?
Well, first of all, I would say what Ellington said is true, because to some extent, because paying people well is a sign of respect. And, you know, as my ability to pay people better through getting better concerts and stuff, I try to share that with the musicians, you know, in as deep a way as I can. And then that second word, you know, respect is so important. And half of the people in the band now have been with me since the beginning. Some of them from 1998, I was working with before I even officially started this band, which was in, I guess, 1992. And you know, back then when it first started, I was calling people who I knew, who I loved their playing, who I respected, who other people recommended. Some of them I didn't know. And still it's that way. Sometimes when there's an opportunity, an opening or whatever, for whatever reason, A lot of times I look to the people in the band to recommend people that they really love, because what is so important in a group like this is that people love to play together. People who respect the sound and the ensemble and the art of blending. I need soloists that have strong identities and that are beautiful and that are interested in connecting their improvisations to the composition. Because what I do not want in my music is that it's my music and now is the solo and it's all about the solo and now we're back to the music. I want my music to be this seamless interface between the written music and the improvised music, whether in the rhythm section or in the solo, so that when you listen, you almost don't even know when the solo starts and concludes or what's written and what's not.
I love that. And I get that feel a lot from every time I listen to your music too. That kind of seamlessness of group expression to solo expression and back. And it's all about expression. Let's talk about a couple of the pieces on the latest release. And let's start with the title track, Data Lords. That was the first piece written.
Yeah, it was commissioned by the Library of Congress. Yeah, I came up with that opening idea, the boom, beep, boom, and I started playing around with it. And right away, I thought, oh, this is just the inundation of big data. And then I had the idea of it being really what it's about is this idea that artificial intelligence will take us over and destroy us. And, you know, you can look at it. It was interesting in watching this movie. I talked about The Social Dilemma. Because what one of the people, and these are all people that used to work at Google or Facebook, these were the creators of this stuff that talk about it. And basically saying, you don't have to wait for that dystopian moment or whatever where humanity is completely wiped out. All you have to look at is where we are now. The complete polarity in politics, the confusion about what truth is. There are so many aspects of that I think we can look, if we look at suicide rates among young people, that we can look and say, you know what, this stuff is destroying us. We are destroying ourselves. The pushing of free content and us being addicted and wanting all this stuff, in a way, we're eating ourselves alive. We're eating our societies alive. So it is that, you know, but this was more the dystopian moment of that moment of singularity. But I liked what this guy said, and it could be seen that way too.
Oh, yeah. I want to ask briefly about the track Sputnik. You talked about when you write, images come out for you. And obviously when I listen, images come out for me. As soon as you hear the name Sputnik, if you're old enough to remember anything about it, you remember, you know, it changed the world, but it was really the size of a basketball, this little thing just kind of going around. And as you develop the theme in there, I feel like the first thing I hear is that little kind of almost beep, beep. I can imagine that thing. And it was teeny, but we could see it from, you know, fields in rural America. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, I feel like I hear 10,000 things beeping and hovering in geosynchronous orbit around the Earth. And it's like, well, where did that all come from? Oh, wait, it's all been happening, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think so many of us aren't even aware of it. I've been seeing in the news that it's a real problem for people taking pictures with telescopes. Because when they take pictures and they're time released, they're seeing all these white lines going across the whole sky, destroying the images, because so many corporations are putting up so many satellites. I don't even know all the uses, but certainly it's data driven.
Right. Now, you have for really a couple of decades now been an ardent advocate for digital rights for artists in this new age. And, you know, you're with the first organization, Artist Share, with a whole different funding model for creating art for musicians and all that. You've testified before Congress. And now this year with the pandemic, artists are under increasing economic and dystopian economic pressure. And I feel like the pandemic kind of brings all the issues in your new album project into really clear focus. How are your artists dealing? And what do you think is the path ahead for performing musicians and recording musicians?
Well, I mean, I certainly hope the time will come soon, you know, through vaccination and everything, that, you know, we will get back to where we were, because people doing concerts in at home and in duos from different places. It doesn't have the connectivity that music, I mean, it's a marvel what people are managing to do, and thank God, and find, everybody's trying to find a way to make money, because partially because our recordings and also the royalties that we used to get through radio and everything are so diminished now because of the internet. Not because of the internet, because of the way the economy is structured for musicians. What things like YouTube, you know, doesn't really pay much of anything. And then Spotify, very, very, very little, just not even an amount worth talking about for most people. And so now you take away the live concerts on top of it. And all that's left is, you know, okay, trying to teach online and doing some Zoom concerts here and there. Of course, for me with a big band, that's not possible. So yeah, it's a real problem. I worry about the concert halls, how they're going to manage. I guess in some places are opening up so that, you know, people can sit far apart, but then there goes their profit. The kinds of groups that are playing are going to have to be solos or duos or trios or, you know, something quite small. We have to get past it with the vaccinations and to bring it back. And I think it'll be damaged for a long time. I think there's a lot of venues that may not come back. It's a really, really impossible time for most musicians.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Well, let's introduce a ray of hope and connectedness here. Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about one of the tracks from the second CD in the release, Our Natural World. Let's talk about the song, The Sun Waited for Me, which is just gorgeous.
Yeah, so the first version I wrote of this piece was for Dawn Upshaw and the Australian Chamber Orchestra. It was on an album of mine called Winter Morning Walks. The title taken from the title of a book by Ted Kooser, poet laureate, Pulitzer Prize winner, lives in the Midwest. And he wrote this extraordinary book that he wrote when he was recovering from cancer. And he was going through a really brutal treatment. He couldn't be in the sun. And so he started in kind of late fall, early winter, going for a walk every day. And then at the end of that walk, he wrote a poem and he put it on a postcard and sent it to his friend, Jim Harrison. And he did 100 of them. He ended up publishing them in this book called Winter Morning Walks, 100 Poems to Jim Harrison. And it is the most life-affirming book. I recommend it to everybody, especially in these times, you know, where I think people are wrapped in a lot of fear. These poems are just magnificent. And the very final one in the book, he wrote on the vernal equinox. The poem is, how important it must be to someone that I am alive and walking and that I have written these poems. This morning, the sun stood right at the end of the road and waited for me. And, you know, it is just such a sweet idea that the sun is waiting specifically for him. You know, it's just, it's so beautiful. And so, and it was one that I thought, oh, I want to turn this into an instrumental for my band. And so I have Marshall Jilks playing the trombone solo melody, and then Donnie McCaslin playing the improvisation around it. And it's meant to be a life affirming. And I think in these times too, just reminding us to get out, walk. And I think so much if we connect to the moon, to the sun, to the stars, if we can still see the stars with all the satellites, connecting to that, because that gives us some perspective on our world and on ourselves and on the things that matter. And saying that this world is there waiting for us if we connect to it. If we connect to it, that we can be disconnected. And I don't think... It's like in the short term, yes, we're addicted, but what really gives us this feeling of wholeness, and it is connecting with this natural world and connecting with ourselves through those silent walks and those moments where we take this phone and we turn it off, we leave it at home, and we just are. And so, yeah, Ted Kooser, he's a saving grace. Reading some Ted Kooser poetry every day in the pandemic is a good idea.
Here's a little bit of the music that Ted Kooser's poetry inspired Maria Schneider to compose, The Sun Waited for Me, from her latest two-disc recording, Data Lords.
Well, composer, band leader, and just all-around great human being, Maria Schneider. Her latest album is entitled Data Worlds. Sorry, Data Lords.
Data Lords.
Data Lords. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.